Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, I'm Michael Chakraverty.
And I'm Mark Watson.
And this is the Menkind Podcast. We're going to take a deep dive into masculinity, exploring what being a man actually means, along with a variety of brilliant guests.
You know, men talking about men is a notoriously underrepresented area of podcasting. Not anymore.
Morning, Michael here, Mark there again. Hello, Mark, how are you?
Thanks for asking, as ever, Michael. I'm pleased to say I'm in fairly good health and spirits. Yeah,
that's good. You don't often ask how I am. I'm doing well as well. Thank you very much.
It's all one way, actually, to care in this relationship, isn't it? You know I care. It's implied.
It's a silent caring.
Yeah. I'm more the sort of standoff father figure.
Father figure, that's quite something that you've just put on yourself there.
I'm just saying I'm very proud of you, my boy. Now.
This week we have the wonderful Ollie Ollerton.
You're in Shrewsbury. Is it nice? It's a beautiful day today.
Absolutely stunning. It was beautiful this morning, like frosty, clear skies. Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm out on the water after this, so...
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Walking on, or...?
No, I'm on top of it.
That's a good start, yeah.
Yes, the first time I've spoken to a soldier, I think. A real-life soldier in my life.
I'm just trying to think if it's the first time I've spoken to a soldier. I haven't, certainly haven't got a list of them. No, it's not quite for me, but it's up there. It's, neither of us is a person that regularly encounters soldiers. Let's be honest about that.
And not soldiers who've been attacked by apes. Little teaser for you there. Enjoy.
We're fortunate to be joined this week by... the impressive figure of Ollie Ollerton. Ollie, well, a lot of people will have come across you, but can you just somehow try and summarise the vast amount of stuff that you've done in your career, or at least what you do now?
Yeah, which is really important because everyone knows me from SAS Who Dares Wins on Channel 4. I'm a former UK Special Forces soldier, but I don't hang my coat on that accreditation or this word of celebrity, which I'm still not used to. I'm an entrepreneur. I've got a few businesses. I am very much focused on self-development, inspiring other people. So that is the main focus of my business interests.
Yeah, you've got a company which is all about that, basically, about enabling people to break free of the sort of psychological shackles that keep us from our goals. Is that fair?
I like that. That'll be on the wall next week.
There you go. I've accidentally got myself a job as copywriter for Ollie there.
Yes.
So there you go. Ollie is basically ex-military, reluctant celebrity, and now professionally inspires people to achieve stuff. And me and Michael are just sitting here having just had a muffin.
A lovely muffin, though.
Apparently it was really nice. I didn't even get it.
The first question we always ask everybody, Ollie, is kind of taking you back to when you were younger, I suppose, and the idea of masculinity. When did you kind of first encounter the concept of masculinity, and what did that look like?
God, that's a bloody deep question, isn't it?
Thank you. I wrote it myself.
It's one we ask everyone, but I think you're the first guest we've had who, in their memoirs, describes getting in trouble as a kid for running around with a sawn-off shotgun. That might be a good starting
point. That's the
first, yeah. Yeah. I was on sort of turbo to masculinity, and I had a very sort of hands-on, alpha male-driven upbringing anyway. You know, it was all motorbikes and go-karts and all kinds of getting into trouble. And unfortunately, that went a bit too far when I did get a sawn-off shotgun and went on a bit of a Rambo rampage. So I tell you what, I think it was around about that.
That does sound like going a bit too far, I think. Normally anything with the phrase rampage in it is bad news.
No one got hurt, by the way. No one got hurt. But yeah, I think, you know what it was? I think it was around that time that Rambo came out. And I'm pretty sure that was around about 1983. And I know it sounds a bit funny, but, you know, Rambo, the film came out. And it was like, that was my, almost like my call to manhood.
which is something we ask people about. We often ask guests what was their core, what was their sort of signifier of manhood, and a lot of people do go for, you know, all action figures, not surprisingly.
Yeah, and what qualities in that film did you kind of aspire to or see as something that you'd like to be more of or be more like?
I don't know. He was just like an absolute legend, wasn't he? You know, I think a lot of that stuff, you know, it really inspired me to join the military because he was an ex-veteran. He was unstoppable. You know, he didn't conform, which is something that I've adopted all the way through my career up until today.
Mm. You're not suddenly changing your mind about that?
No, definitely not.
This podcast isn't you suddenly being a conformist.
No. Well, we'll see afterwards. I'll let you know.
Yeah, maybe we'll change you.
Yeah. But it was that sort of, I saw him as the perfect sort of alpha male, and it was like after that, you know, I wanted to live, breathe and be Rambo. I think I actually did. I'm going to say something that was going to embarrass me then, but I think I actually told people at school to start calling me Rambo.
Me and Michael did that as well, but we just didn't get much traction with it. Do you think now, I mean, obviously you, Olive, ended up enacting quite a lot of those Rambo type ideals, like you were in the military, you have done quite a lot of SAS type stuff. Do you think now that those sort of icons are good for boys growing up in particular? Like, is it a good thing to see that as aspirational, do you think?
Yes and no. You know, at the end of the day, I think, look, the perception is far different than reality. If everything is around about you focused on chasing an image, it will never live up to expectation when you actually get to where you want to be, because you won't actually get to wherever you want to be. It has to be really something that is more focused around the feeling. And that's just the way we're actually wired. We are image driven as a species. I think that's where a lot of us fall down, because we push the feelings to one side and we end up driving towards an image because it looks cool. And that there's a lot to do with ego in that.
Yeah.
We're so focused on trying to be someone that looks good for everyone else. And then the real us, the real person we are, we become a byproduct of that person we're trying to be, as opposed to, you know, really feeling the person we should be. Mm.
That's the sort of insight that a lot of, you know, more traditionally masculine men don't have, you know, maybe ever. So when did you start to break out of these sort of traps, you think? When did you have a moment of revelation like that? Or was it a series of moments? Or
there was a big turning point in my life, 2011, where I actually, because I spent my life not understanding what my purpose was, what my calling was. I was massively confused after joining the military, thinking it would be the be-all and end-all. Mm. You know, I had this perfect vision, again, which was based on image, that was focused on this lifestyle. I thought it would fit and tick every box. You know, I'm quite happy saying this, and I think I don't see many people that actually say it out there, but I didn't find what I was looking for in the special forces. I didn't, that world, that masculine world, you know, that I'd focused on so much, it didn't tick all the boxes for me whatsoever. I feel that I was just really trying too hard to be a man, as opposed to actually just getting on with it.
And that comes back to that image, isn't it, that you kind of have in your head from being younger about what you're looking for. You've spoken quite a lot about being in the military. I think it's a fascinating area that I have no insight or...
Yeah, me and Michael are very different sort of versions of men, but one area where we meet is neither of us would have been within a million miles of the military, so we're fascinated by all this.
Yeah, and I'm particularly fascinated by, you've been talking about the kind of the difference between physical strength and emotional strength within the military, and I think when you were doing selection, if I get these numbers wrong, I'm sorry, but there was something like 350 people started and then five... in the end of the selection process, and you were
tougher
one of the
five. Than Bake Off.
Tougher than Bake Off, I have to say, yeah. You said that there were fitter people than you, but they didn't make it through. And I wondered whether you could talk about why that might be or that experience.
I'll tell you what, because this is really interesting fitting into everything I've just been saying, because this was perception. Again, it was perception. You know, I turned up as one of the youngest lads on the selection process, and I turned up on that day at the Brecon Beacons, and, you know, you're straight into it. And as soon as I got off the bus, I wanted to do a U-turn. I thought I got off the wrong stop, because I was like looking around me and all these people looked like my image of a special forces soldier even before they'd started doing the process.
Yeah.
And I looked at myself and I thought, I felt like an absolute boy. Honestly, I was scrawny anyway, and I felt like a little kid. So although my perception of them was that they were fitter than me.
Yeah.
And actually they weren't. They weren't fitter than me. They, you know, because again, you know, we're so intimidated by image, and it really doesn't have that much to do with it. You know what I mean? And then very quickly, when we're climbing the first mountain, you know, within the first 1K going up the mountain, those actual people that I was intimidated by, I was past them and they were like, I can't go on. And I was like, holy shit. You know, and that to me gave me so much confidence.
that's obviously a pretty specific situation, like trying out for special forces. But this is something we see again and again, isn't it? People that look like they know what they're doing can easily overwhelm you, just psychologically, before you've even seen them try and do the thing they're meant to be good at.
Yeah, this all comes down to ego. And, you know, I'll go back to your question before because I didn't answer it. And that was the fact that was there a turning point? The turning point for me was really 2011-ish. And I crashed and burned on a grand scale. I went below zero. And at that point, it was like starting to rebuild myself. And although I wasn't, you know, it wasn't a turning point where every day after that was a perfect reflection of what I wanted to be. It was like, it was a slow sort of climb out of where I was and starting to shed away this having to live up to expectations and trying to be this alpha male. And that's what I feel like, you know, a lot of men are doing. They're trying to live up to this reputation. And all those, you know, it's an interesting thing for me. I talk about Rambo and stuff like that. When you've got films like that, they don't actually really help. You know, it's the same with everything. It's like social media, the whole lot. Everyone is looking at this image of everyone else with perfect lives when it's pretty much a lie, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're watching films where these alpha males doing some very unrealistic feats of masculinity, and then people think that they've got to...
Yeah, jumping out of helicopters. There's an awful lot of that in films, much more than there is in most men's lives.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing if you then get hooked onto the fact of that's what it must be to be an alpha male. You must have to be that type of person when you don't, you know. I'll tell you the turning point for me is when I actually went to Costa Rica in 2019. I went to a retreat and we took plant medicine, ayahuasca.
So very recently this is.
Yeah, no, and this was a turning point for me. And you go into this dream state and it's an amazing, amazing journey. A lot happened for me on that journey. And I came away thinking, I'm not living for anyone else now apart from myself. But what I mean by that is I don't do anything because I'm doing it to impress anyone. I do what I do because it means something to me. And if people don't like it, that's their fault. You know, I think there's a lot of strength in people start to focus on them being the most important project and not doing stuff for other people and how it looks.
Mm. So leading up to that point, did you feel like you were doing things for other people? And what did that kind of look like?
I think we all are. We absolutely all are. We're all doing so much stuff to... For me, it was like joining the Special Forces. I was doing that because it looked great.
Mm.
I was looking from the outside in at me and how good it would make me look. And then when I actually got there and was in like confused that it wasn't really doing it for me, it wasn't ticking all the boxes, I simply hadn't found my purpose. I mean, it's easy now looking back, you know, reflection is great, but you know, hindsight never won any wars. But
it's quite interesting this because a number of people we've had on the podcast have said that being a soldier was one of the big things that they wanted when they were a boy, and you've lived that. Do you think it's quite common that people find the military doesn't tick the boxes that they thought it was? Did you meet other people who didn't get out of it what they thought they would?
Yeah, no, I meet a lot of people that do. Loads of people that feel the same way, but I meet minimal amounts of people that actually are vocal about it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because again, they're still falling into that trap of, oh, I don't want people to think, you know, I want people to think that the image was... It's all about, you know, that for me is just all about ego. People are so invested in making sure that they don't look weak. They don't look the opposite of what they strive to be.
And you talk about this in your book.
Yeah.
It takes strength to walk away from, say, a bad relationship or a job that isn't fulfilling you or whatever it might be, because it does involve saying to the world, those decisions I made haven't worked out. And we'd rather press on with something that's going badly than make that admission a lot of the time.
We find it really hard to take that short-term discomfort. I relate it to toothache. People are happy to go with that numb pain for a long, long time when they know just a short extraction, a little bit of pain over a short period of time will just resolve that.
Yeah.
You know, but they're quite happy to walk around in that sort of numb state. That really relates into the fact that us as humans, again, and this all comes down to our survival instinct, we are absolutely addicted to repetition, whether that's good or bad. And that's why, you know, everything I teach, everything I talk about is all about really making sure that these habit loops that we're stuck in are positive habit loops. Because if they're not, we end up in a negative habit loop, which is strangely called a comfort zone, which really does not offer us any growth or strength whatsoever.
Yeah, comfort zone is almost a misnomer, isn't it? It just means the familiar and comfort aren't necessarily the same thing. On the subject of how your brain's wiring works, I've got quite a specific question here. You mentioned ayahuasca, is it the medicine which you took in Costa Rica? Now, I've heard people talk about this before, and this is a good example of comfort zones, actually, because I don't think I would ever have the courage to experiment with something like that, which I don't really know what it's going to do to my brain. But every time I hear people talk about stuff like ayahuasca retreats, it does... I mean, I don't know if you can fully describe the process. Would you say your brain was literally was a different thing after... And how? How does it work? What happens to you?
Well, for me, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that happened. I did about 4 or 5 ceremonies over a 9-day period. I mean, and I was there with a load of veterans from all over the world that had some quite hideous stories. But, you know, for me, it was really helping to unravel that trauma. All the bad stuff that happens in our life, especially childhood trauma. Our system, our survival blueprint has a mechanism where it immediately locks away that intimate trauma. Mm. You know, to get you through that moment, it locks it away. And the trouble is, if you don't deal with that trauma, which for me, you know, I had quite a horrendous incident when I was a kid.
Is this the chimp attack? I think we need to mention the chimp attack.
Chimp attack, yeah, when I was 10. Yeah.
Incredible moment in your biography where, a chimp went after you at a circus.
Yeah, well, I mean, I put myself in the danger area. You know, it wasn't the chimp's fault, you know, which is another thing I actually learnt on this ayahuasca thing. You know, I'd always gone on about being the victim and, you know, my story was all about poor old me. And that was a real reflection for me, because when I actually went and did the ayahuasca medicine, it put me into the perspective of being the chimp and the fact that I'd walked into the chimp's arena that day. And
so is it a bit like being hypnotized, something like you're talking this stuff through under the influence of the ayahuasca? Or
you're actually there. Yeah, no, you're actually like, you go on a journey in your mind.
You're mentally retreating and reenacting it. Wow.
It sounds bizarre. It sounds really bizarre.
But this is why I'm so interested. I've never heard anyone describe it in any detail. They just say, oh, you should try ayahuasca. And I always go, yeah, that sounds cool. And I'm too scared to ask them what it is. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate. It was absolutely crazy, because, I mean, it was, I didn't realize I was going to go. The thing is, plant medicine, right? You can go there and say, I want to resolve this, I want to do that. Mm. It doesn't listen to you. Mm. The plant medicine works where it's needed, not where you want it to go.
Yeah, it'll flush stuff out you weren't anticipating.
Yeah, so I didn't expect it to flip and go, you know, go back to the chimp and all that. But all of a sudden, I ended up going back. I saw myself there. I was there as the 10-year-old boy just about, and I saw the chimp. I heard the roar. And then all of a sudden, before I was just about to get attacked, I then went into the chimp. And I became the chimp. I know that sounds, for those listening in, must be thinking, oh my God, this is just nuts. Ollie's the lunatic. But that then helped me understand that situation. It really gave me so much compassion for what the chimp was going through. And the fact that I'd walked into that arena that day, I was the one that was threatening that chimp's baby. You know, so it really helped me take me out of being the victim. And it helped me sort of have a lot of compassion for the chimp.
And you said as well that you'd been the... It kind of made you realize that you were, you'd kind of always been putting yourself into a danger area. You'd always been kind of putting yourself into those situations. Could you talk a bit more about that? Because I'm assuming that wasn't just in that situation.
Yeah, that for me. And that's why I talk about that, because I have very vague memories pre 10 years old. It was almost like I was born at 10.
Because of this trauma, because of locking out the trauma.
Yeah, because of the trauma, I don't see beyond that. I can't remember beyond 10 years old. You know, it's almost like, because the trauma was so bad. But after that, I was almost addicted to pushing myself to find that sort of, I was chasing death after that point for so, you know, whether that was like a prolonged sort of path of self-destruction through alcohol, drugs, whatever it was, you know, putting myself in war zones and, you know, going to war zones thinking that was the solution for me and all this stuff. And then putting myself into dangerous situations when I was in the war zone. It was like I was pushing the bar so much. It was ridiculous. And I honestly don't know how I made it through, but thank God I did.
Do you think you were kind of conscious of, I mean, you've spoken quite openly about dealing with mental health issues and about things like drugs and alcohol and things like that. Were you conscious that those were kind of numbing the pain at the time? Or was it just kind of a sense of buying into a culture that you saw around you?
For me, I couldn't handle being in my own skin. For me, the answer to that, you know, I had so much chatter going on up here. I had so much confusion about who I was, what my purpose was. And I didn't actually look back at that time and go, I don't know what my purpose is. It wasn't, It wasn't about that. I now look back and understand that I didn't understand where I fit into life.
Yeah. It's almost like if you could ask yourself, what is my purpose, then you're halfway to solving the problem. It's that we don't ask ourselves the question often.
But we don't ask that question. And we don't, we're born into this world. You know, we're given these sort of labels. We're given these labels. These are your options. You know, you go to university, you do whatever, you know, and you've got all these different options you can choose. And for me, I didn't fit into any of these pre-described boxes. I was walking around thinking, I was never happy, never settled, never content. And that for me, just, you know, it was just easier for me to reach for a drink and that would cut out. I would have been in a constant state of numbness. Yeah. And that for me was a lot better than just sitting in my own skin with all that confusion. Now looking back, it was just the fact I needed to understand what my purpose was. But I actually tripped over that around about 2011 when I went over to Southeast Asia when I was rescuing the kids from child prostitution slavery. You know, that was the turning point for me.
It's been quite a life story where you don't even mention rescuing people from child slavery till half an hour in. And even the chimp attack, just as a footnote. But I really recognise the feeling you're talking about of not being comfortable in your own skin. I've felt like that a lot in my life, even when I am doing stuff that I feel like I'm good at. And I think a lot of people listening will also recognise it. For people who, this might sound like an invitation to advertise your company, but for people who don't have the immediate option of, like, you know, going to a retreat in Costa Rica or doing some huge thing to shock themselves out of it, what are small steps that you'd recommend to people to find that purpose or to get out of your own skin or to get out of that feeling of being trapped in your own skin? Basically, how do you advise people to, especially men, I suppose, to do it better?
Well, the thing that you have got to do is you have got to be stepping over that line of limitation. And this isn't just like everyone come to breakpoint because we'll show you how to do it. But this can be in anything, because the more you don't step out of that line of limitation, the more the wall on the inside builds and it gets thicker on the inside. Before you know it, you absolutely, you know, you can't even move. Basically, people need to really overstep that mark. When you don't step over that line of limitation, you live constantly in that comfort zone. Your ego always designs the best outcomes for you to make you look good in any situation, 9 times out of 10. Mm. Anyone that's seen the TV show SAS Who Dares Wins, it's exactly the same as what they do in the military. And every time you step outside of your comfort zone into some unfamiliar circumstance, something you've never done before, your ego is nowhere to be seen. It's like on a horse out of there. It's gone. It's like, fuck this.
And that's what you need. You need to dispense with your ego.
And that's what you need, because, that's it. Because only at that point do you then get to start your actions, reactions, your thought processes, everything become organic and raw. And that's why you see so many people breaking down on SAS Who Dares Wins. I'm using that as an example because everyone's seen that. People break down and all of a sudden you've seen that raw organic character, and that person on TV has, for the first time in so many years, they're feeling who they are for the first time in a long, long time.
It's interesting, isn't it? People obviously go on a show like SAS Who Dares Wins expecting that they're going to be able to exhibit, you know, masculine qualities, that they're going to show who they are and what they're capable of. But it sounds like you're putting them through almost the opposite. You're making them surprise themselves.
Well, they come on that show, and honestly, within the first couple of hours of being there, they then realise that all the plans that they had, all the visualisation, all the thoughts of how they were going to, you know, tactically do this.
All that male posturing, especially.
Yeah. They realise within 1 hour that all those plans are absolutely worthless. And then all of a sudden, they've got to reshape that and then realise, you know, each one comes on going, I'm going to smash it. I'm the alpha male. I'm going to beat everyone else. I'm going to be one standing at the end. And then they're like that. Oh, shit. I've actually got to work with everyone.
Yeah, I saw a bit of this. I did this Bear Grylls show where you go to an island and, you know, a bunch of, again, so-called celebrities. And there was a bloke called Ewan Thomas who was exactly as you described. Lovely guy, you know, and like he's a great guy. But by his own admission, he went in as team captain going, I've got this guy. He used to say things like, we're going to beat the island. We're going to beat this. And within a few days, he had been smashed to pieces mentally. And by the end of it, he'd picked himself up and still is a different human, I think. But as you say, the ego had to be buried. And I'm not criticising him. All of us had to abandon our ego. But he was the most traditional male in that environment. And as a result, just like you said, he had the most ego to probably get rid of. And that's because as men, we do think we have to be the captain, the leader in charge.
Yeah, and a lot of what we've talked about today has been about the idea that a lot of men visualize themselves or see themselves in the image of a certain type of man or not, and the absence of that image can also be really impactful, I imagine. When you were growing up, but also perhaps now, were there men that you admired in the real world that weren't Rambo jumping out of helicopters?
Along the way, are there men that you think have been good examples of how we should behave as men, putting our ego aside, all that stuff?
There were always people that, you know, I always seem to hang out with an older crowd. I was always inspired by quite hard lads, really. You know, it's always, they were sort of my mentors growing up. I've never been one that's, and I still don't get fazed by people on TV and sort of celebrities and all that kind of stuff, because I just really understand that it's just a stage show.
Yeah.
People around me inspired me. You know, it's like, people won't know them, but it was more people that were close to me that sort of inspired me.
Oh, we're still interested, regardless of whether people know them. Often people name guys that you wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's more to do with the kind of, I suppose, the qualities in them that you saw as admirable, I think, is interesting to know.
Yeah, but the thing is, for me, I mean, I think back then I was so confused. You know, I was actually inspired by people that were hard, that could get into a fight and, you know, beat someone up and all that. And it was just totally wrong. You know, it wasn't the right people. I wasn't following people that really.
What about now?
Yeah, what do you look for now as good qualities in a man?
I look for someone that is emotionally connected. I look for someone that has emotional intelligence, someone that's not trying to be something for everyone else, someone that's just, you know, and I think that is where the problem lies. There's so many people out there, they're living, they're so much under pressure because they're scared that if they do something that doesn't reflect this image of a stereotypical alpha male, that then they will look weak. But they're not living for the person they are. You know, everyone's trying to, you know, I am, everyone's trying to be something instead of just being who they are.
Yeah, a lot of your core advice to men in particular, but to people really, seems to come down to this thing. Identify what you want to live as and that alone, and pursue that, and zone out any reaction from other people. Is that fair?
Yeah, because you do everything for you. You know, I talk a lot and I always state the most important project is you. And I know it's a cliche and I keep talking about it, but it's such an effective cliche. Is there's a reason when you go on a plane that the emergency procedures, if the emergency mask comes down, put it on yourself before you help anyone
Yeah, that's true. That does always sound quite heartless, but there's, as you say, a good reason for it.
But it's, you know, unless you've got a strong foundation, you can't, you know, there's a lot of fractured people out there that are trying to help other people. And not only are they diluting what they've got to give, they're just not being that effective in helping other people anyway. Everything I do at the moment, you know, I do a lot of corporate stuff, a lot of corporate work, and they say, well, look, how can you help our organization grow? And I'm like, this, take it right back to each individual, every single individual. People are your most important asset. You know, before you start loading people with leadership and teamwork and let's look at their root foundation. Look, once you've got that solid and robust, you can then start adding things on top of that. Because a good leader is not someone, you know, is essentially just a very good, grounded person.
Rather than someone with special powers or special qualities.
Yeah, no, I mean, bad leaders are people that they're trying to adopt a skill that they just haven't got, you know, before you know it, that, you know, then they think, oh, I'm a leader, I must be a dictator. That's what they do, you know, instead of just being themselves. But the point I'm saying is, regardless of whether it's for business or anything, everyone should really start to focus on them, and that they should be the most important project, whether you're male, female, whatever it is. Look at yourself, really start to invest in yourself. Happiness is not external, it's internal. And that was a massive turnaround point for me. And once you start to reflect on yourself, as opposed to thinking everything's out there, the return on investment is phenomenal.
It's been good. People say, use this phrase, doing work on yourself. And we hear a lot, men won't do work on themselves. And I've heard that constantly, but this is one of the most sort of detailed unpackings of that idea I've heard, actually. I can imagine now what it would mean to do that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So we always ask at the end of these interviews, we always ask our guests three qualities that they would put into the ideal man, yeah, but also perhaps the ideal human, I suppose. What three qualities do you think, if you were to create a man, if you were building a man from scratch, from the foundations, what three cornerstones would you put in as those foundations?
Yeah, you've touched on this a bit, maybe, with the emotional intelligence. And the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm limited to three, but I mean, I would look at...
You can use hyphens if you like.
Yeah, you can cheat the rules a bit.
Well, really, I'd the integrity, loyalty, compassion, they would be the cornerstone.
And compassion is not one you'd have named when you started out on this journey, probably.
Like, no.
Interesting that you said integrity. That's not actually one we've heard before. Why did you choose that? What do you mean by that?
Integrity is just someone that's very honest. Mm-hmm. I just think someone that's very sort of disciplined, steadfast in their position, and makes sort of quality decisions.
Yeah, integrity, loyalty, and compassion are three...
They're three nice words.
Good complementary things, because they're quite different. Each one of those is a different area of human activity, really.
Yeah, honestly, it's been really interesting talking to you, Ollie. I feel like we've learned quite a lot.
We've covered a lot of ground here.
Thank you for joining us. Do you have anything... Well, you do have something to plug. Would you like to plug your many books?
Or your course or anything, really?
Yeah, well... I want to get us back into the front-facing sort of arena of helping people. This is the Breakpoint Academy here. I got this up and running just before lockdown. So I can't wait to get people back here and doing some events with them all. We've got a big focus. We see there's going to be a massive requirement moving forward for people with mental health. Mm. I hate to call it mental health issues because it's not a case of mental health issues. I want to start people looking at prevention and not cure. You know, you shouldn't have to wait till you fall down before you realize you've got to pick yourself back up, and get people to start to understand that mindfulness and mental wealth is an ongoing process, and we should be continuous improvement models and not waiting for us to crash and burn.
Absolutely.
Which is what you did. You had to learn that the hard way, basically.
Yeah, no, I did. I mean, I learned the hard way. You know, don't wait until your mobile phone's ran totally out of battery before you plug it back in, and we're the same.
That's good advice, literally as well as metaphorically, actually. <That's> Nothing worse. Charge your personality when you're at 30% is what you're saying, not 3%.
Yeah, don't wait for that moment before, you know, and that's what I had to do. I had to pick up the pieces, and, you know, it made some interesting chapters in the book. But
And that book is called Battle Ready, by the
way. Well, the first one's Breakpoint, and that was really laying the foundation of who I am, what I've been through. It's still inspiring. Yeah. And then that went on to Battle Ready, which was really the process I put into play when I came back in 2014. Locked myself into isolation because I needed to focus on me as a person to be able to build a company. Okay, so the first, you know, I had this dream of starting this company, Breakpoint. Breakpoint was the focus, but, you know, I wasn't ready to start that journey until I'd really start to focus on me as the goal, and that was building myself. You know, but Breakpoint's about helping other people. I can't help people unless I'm from a strong foundation. So that was Battle Ready. And then even with my latest book, Scar Tissue, you know, which is fiction, it really is still, you know, it addresses a lot of those, especially male, sort of alpha male issues and problems that we face on a daily basis. So there is a strong message. I mean, storytelling in itself is an amazing platform.
Yeah, definitely.
Quite a bit of homework for our listeners there.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so
much
for joining us.
This has been great. Thanks a lot, Ollie Oldson.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ollie. Cheers, mate.
And that was Ollie, a wonderful, fascinating, thought-provoking, riveting conversation. Trying to use as many of those words as I can now because I keep being called out for getting it wrong.
Yeah, you got a look in your eye there like you were just going to whip through them. There was nothing I could do. Now, we sort of pride ourselves on having quite unexpected conceptual gaps between one guest and another. It's always very different each week. And this, again, is another large jump, I think, to next week's guest. Next week's guest, for a start, is assigned female at birth, is a great friend of mine, also a sort of very popular podcaster in her own right, more than us, in fact, so in a way.
Which is surprising, isn't it, really, considering we are at the pinnacle of podcasting games.
It's very rare we have to accept that somebody else has any sort of following to compare with us, but she's put a lot of time in, I suppose. And so we're basically looking to get on her coattails a bit with next week's episode.
Are you going to say who it is, Mark?
A lot of people will have guessed by it now from context. It's Sophie Hagen.
And yes. Also an influencer on social media.
Oh yeah, hashtag influencer, yes.
You've been influencing, what was it you were influencing last week?
She's talked a lot about her bathroom recently.
That wasn't the influence. I think was it like dating app? Was it a dating app that you're influencing?
I mean, in a way, everything I do is influencing.
Yeah, are you influencing us right now?
A bit like Jesus.
I think I am. Like, do you not feel like bettering yourself?
I have already asked you about your glasses.
So I'm going to go and I'm going to go and seek out a natural deodorant.
I have been wanting
well,
you to do that.
Do I have a promo code for you?
I'll swipe up immediately. Just as soon as I've worked out how to do things like that.
I wanted to say a quick thank you to everybody who reached out over the past couple of weeks. You may not know, but my granddad passed away recently, which was really sad. He was a very brilliant man, and it's been a bit rough over the past couple of weeks, but it's been really lovely to have all the gorgeous messages that have come through to say with well wishes and things. I'm not very good at talking about this sort of thing, but it's been really heartwarming, and it's lovely to think that there's a kind of community of people out there listening to the podcast, and it's truly meant the world. So thank you so much for reaching out, and we're genuinely so proud that you like listening to us and like listening to our rambling and our endless professionalism. So yeah, thank you so much. And if you would like to reach out to us, you can follow us on all the socials at Menkind Podcast, and we are on emails at menkindpodcast@gmail.com. Oh god, I managed to turn that into a plug, didn't I? It was meant to be much more heartfelt than that.
You went from emotional appreciation into plug, and that sort of ruthlessness that will see us climb the podcast charts, Michael. And I would echo that. We are very proud of the community that listens to this. Please do keep looking after Michael. It can't always be me listening to him. We have to ask you to like the podcast and give us, you know, well, I was going to say high ratings, but it's actually more than that. Michael is quite hard line about this.
Well, I feel like actually when we talked about this outro, you said 5 stars or fuck off, Mark, was your exact
wording.
That was
a suggested slogan, but I think we tempered it a little bit. I think that was the agreement. Anyway, please do that for ego and for algorithm reasons.
For egos and algorithms, please give us 5 stars and nice words. We like the nice words. Talking of nice words, actually.
Yes, we've got some nice words
we
here.
We had a tweet in from lovely Linda Lawton. That's a nice bit of alliteration there, who said that she loved the podcast, and she said that listening to the conversations felt like she was on the top deck of a bus overhearing us, and it was glorious. Bit creepy, but really nice to hear.
If you want to couch your compliments in ways other than it was a bit like stalking you on public transport, that's also welcome. But thanks all the same. Thanks to that sharp-eared person. We have this email as well from someone called Chris. Starts off by saying, hello, Mark and Michael, but then tries loads of different iterations like Markle and Merck and Mr. M and M&M and all this kind of thing. So yeah, real, it's the most someone's lent into this awkward question of whose name comes first.
But still didn't come up with Michael and Mark, which is disappointing.
Not for me, though. thanks for a great podcast. It says, Chris, I've learned a lot, laughed a lot. I'm a 41-year-old cishet guy from New Zealand. I'm on a journey with shaking the ingrained opinions I have from being raised in New Zealand in the Catholic Church and going to an all-boys high school. Your podcast has been a wonderful path to travel. You're both a joy to listen to, and the way you control the podcast without dominating it is refreshing and allows the guest to really shine. I think that might be a very generous way of saying that we don't really know what we're doing. So the more that the guest talks, the happier we are. But nonetheless, Chris has turned that into a positive for us. Thanks, and I look forward to listening to many more episodes. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Listening across the world as well in New Zealand, which is very nice for us.
We love hearing from people in different countries, don't we? It really inflates our sense of how influential we are.
And as we say, egos and algorithms are the most important. Sorry, what I can see currently is Mark and my producer playing with a Zoom filter where they're tossing a red berry to each other as they talk.
It never seems to get old somehow. The phrase, it's been a long lockdown, would apply, but you'd think that it's not even much of an excuse anymore.
Not at all. So while Mark plays with his red beret, we'll let you get back to your week. Have a lovely week, everybody.
Yes, bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.